Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to ST Engineering's first quarter 2019 results briefing. To begin today's briefing, Mr. Cedric Foo, Group CFO, will present the group's performance for the financial period ended 31st March 2019. Following that, Mr. Ng Seng Chan, President of the Marine Sector, will share more about the recent contract win, the Polar Security Cutter program. Without further delay, I'll hand over to Cedric. Cedric, please.
Yeah, thank you, Sylvia. A very good morning to all who are here at ST Engineering and also those who are joining us through webcast. For the group results of first Q 2019, we are pleased to announce that it is a good set of results. I refer you to the slide number 4. Revenue increased by 5% and stood at $1.7 billion. EBIT improved by 16% year-on-year. PBT improved by 11%, and net profit also 11% and stood at $131.1 million. The order book as of end March was $14.1 billion. This is a high number. And about 4.2 of this will be delivered in the remaining months of 2019. Next slide. Group revenue breakdown by sector. Aerospace has higher revenue from Zero and EMS business and is offset slightly by AMM business. But overall, it recorded a 4% increase in revenue. Electronics had a very strong quarter back in one quarter 2018. So at that time, compared to first quarter 2017, the revenue growth was a very fast clip of 22%. So if you like, the 605 is an exceptional figure compared to first quarter 2017 of about 500 or 496. So therefore, I think if you look in that context, 1Q 2019 of 563 million, though a drop from 1Q 18 is still a good long-term trend line. For land systems, we have higher revenue from all three business groups. And marine, slightly lower revenue, but for others, higher revenue from Newtope. And as a group, as I said before, 5% improvement in revenue. This is the breakdown by sectors. Aero has the largest share of revenue, 36%. Electronics growing very fast at 32%. Land 22% and marine 9%. Our defense commercial split is 30-70. By geography, location of customers, Asia constituted the largest at 61%, the United States at 20%, Europe at 12%, and others 7%. PBT at a group level increased by 11%. Aerospace was flat. Electronics up by 8%, largely due to favorable sales mix. And land system up by 5%, and in line with the higher revenue. Marine was up quite a bit, 56%, and due mainly to the improved performance from U.S. marine operations. Others was somewhat flat, but lower PBT loss. As a group, 11% up. Group net profit also increased by 11%, and the breakdown are as follows. Aerospace increased by 6%. This is higher than the PBT increase, and this is due to a change in taxable income mix. For land system, it's down, and this is due to the absence of a favorable tax finalization adjustment, which we had in 2018 first Q, but we did not have in 2019 first Q. The marine net profit is up, and this is also due to better U.S. operations. and lower tax credit due to lower losses. The next slide talks about group margins. On an overall basis, the group margin for 1Q19 is better than 1Q18. The blue and black bars represent 1Q19, and the yellow ones represent 1Q18. On a sector basis, aerospace PBT margin is slightly lower due to unfavorable sales mix. And for land systems, the lower PBT margin was also due to unfavorable sales mix, especially from the auto and M&W business groups. Next, on the balance sheet, total equity and liability increased to 7.98 billion from 7.57 billion a year ago. I want to highlight the right of use assets, the 428 million on the third row. This is as a result of the implementation of SFRS 16, where leases are capitalized on balance sheet. And most of our leases are in land and buildings, and they cut across all sectors. Next, on statement of cash flow, we have lower cash flow from operating activities, even though our net profit is higher. And this is largely due to a change in working capital movement. Basically, we have lower trade payables. In terms of investing, it's more or less the same as first quarter 2018 at 50 million. And in terms of financing activities, we have repaid some bank loans and also bought some treasury shares. The next four slides, I will go into the sector performance. Some of the comments I've already made, so I will make this quite short. For revenue in aerospace, up 4%, PBT is flat, and net profit is up 6%. In terms of PBT, the percentage increase is lower than the revenue increase, and this is largely due to unfavorable sales mix, as well as the absence of a negative impact due to portfolio rationalization in 1Q 2019, the absence of it. In electronics, the revenue is up 7%. It's down 7%, and as I said before, this was due to a very strong 1Q18. PBT is up 8% due to favorable sales mix and partially offset by higher operating expense and lower other income. And net profit is up 8%. For land systems, revenue is up from all business groups. PBT did not rise as fast as revenue, and largely due to unfavorable sales mix and higher OPEX incurred in the robotics area. I think this is an investment for the autonomous vehicle and robotics. Net profit is down slightly due to the absence of a favorable tax adjustment, which we enjoyed in 1Q18 and not in 1Q19. For marine, revenue is somewhat flat. PBT is up some 5.3 million or 56%. And largely due to better performance in the U.S. shipbuilding sector. Net profit is up 3.3 million or 38%. So finally, I leave you with the President and CEO's message. By and large, we had a good start for the year. And on the M&A front, as you have read, we have agreed to acquire New Tech, which is a high-tech satellite communications industry, and it will help us to enhance the connectivity horizontal of our smart city strategy. So over and above that, I think post 1Q19, we have also announced the completion of the MRAS acquisition, so that's going on well. And we also announced the award by the U.S. Navy on behalf of the U.S. Coast Guards for the Polar Ice Cutter program. And I would now like to invite Sing Chan, our president for Marine, to say a little bit about the Polar Icebreaker, which is a significant contract win. Sing Chan, please.
Good morning. Let me, in the next couple of minutes, take you through the highlights of the recent award of 1+2 Polar Security Cutter from the U.S. Department of Navy. The U.S. Coast Guard Polar Security Cutter, in short PSC, is a multi-year program with up to 3 multi-mission PSCs to recapitalize the USCG, the U.S. Coast Guard fleet of heavy icebreakers. V.T. Halter Marine, our U.S. Marine unit, was awarded $1 billion for what we call contract line item 1 and 2, which consists of the procurement of the long lead items as well as the basic detail and production engineering and the construction of PSC 1. As you have read in the press release, the contract comes with options for 2 more PSCs and the cumulative value is Singapore dollars 2.6 billion. PSC number 1 is scheduled for delivery in 2024. The second and third PSC will be delivered in 2025 and 2027, respectively, if the options are exercised. Now, the PSC is a multi-mission vessel. As you can see on the screen, the key features and capabilities are highlighted. So besides ice-breaking capability, it will have good sea-keeping characteristics. The operating range is, we have built in additional margins for the operating range. It's got flight operations. It has got a large working space at the aft of the ship for multi-mission capabilities. It is based on a proven design, and we have several iterations to arrive at the final design before the submission of the technical and price proposal to the U.S. Department of Navy in October 2018. Now, just to the very quick sort of history, in February 2017, we are one of the 5 to be awarded design studies, and it was an 18-month journey going through, as I mentioned earlier, several iterations. In fact, we have gone through 6 spirals and just as many tank tests before we arrive at this final design. So as you all know, a contract was awarded on the 23rd of April 2019. Are we ready to deliver the PSC? Yes, we are. In 2017, we acquired the additional assets in Pascagoula on a land adjacent to our then current V.T. Halter Marine Shipyard. So we have additional capacity to be able to meet the demands of this particular program. It will also provide additional budget, flexibility in the resource deployment between the two yards. We have a huge yard infrastructure, assembly space. We've got necessary launchway. We will be investing in improving the yard infrastructure to be able to launch and berth these PSCs. As I mentioned earlier, we've done rigorous reviews before construction. So this design is based on what we call the mature Polar Stern 2 as a parent design. The Polar Stern 2, just for your information, I think if you surf the net, you'll find out more about this vessel. It's completed more or less the design process and construction. As far as we know, it's been awarded to the German shipyard, Lloyds Werft. As I mentioned earlier, we're in our design and in our submission, we have built in some margins just to give you some example. For example, the requirement is that this icebreaker or this polar security cutter, is only required to build to break 6 feet of ice with margins to build ice thickness greater than 6 feet. We also have got reserve in the engine power, redundancy built in as well. On the team to manage this complex project, we have done projects not exactly the same type, but in terms of complexity, we have also have got track record in such capability. Just, you know, maybe a couple of months ago, we were actually right-sizing the shipyard, but now, because of this wind, we have to increase our workforce, and we are working very hard, and we're very confident of being able to ramp up the workforce, engineers, production workers included, to undertake this program. Now, on the schedule, we had 18 months of the pre-award design studies. We're going to have another 18 months of design studies. So there will be several milestones before we arrive at a stage when we say we are ready to start production. So, and the first vessel will start construction in 2021 and is expected to be delivered in 2024, second half. And the second and third, as I mentioned earlier, they will be expected, they are expected to deliver in 2025 and 2027 respectively. So between each vessel, you see an interval of about 1 year, 4 months. So with that, I end my presentation, so I'm happy to take any questions during the Q&A session. Thank you.
Thank you, Sing Chan. Can I invite the rest of the management team on stage for the Q&A session, please? Let me do a quick introduction of the team. From your left, Mr. Lim Sergi, representing Aerospace. We have Sing Chan from Marine Sector. Mr. Vincent Chong, President and CEO of ST Engineering. Mr. Ravinder Singh from Electronics. Dr. Lee Shang Long, representing Land Systems and Cedric. With that, I'll hand over to Mr. Vincent Chong. Vincent, please.
Good morning to all of you who are here with us at ST Engineering Hub and to those of you who are joining us via webcast. You have heard from Cedric's presentation that the group achieved a 5% increase in revenue and that both PBT and net profit rose 11% year-on-year. At the business sector level, aerospace posted 4% and 6% year-on-year increase in revenue and net profit. Revenue for electronics was down 7% from the first quarter of 2018, which at that time was a very strong quarter in first quarter of 2018, with 22% year-on-year growth then. But then if you take the difference between these numbers, 2019 first quarter is still a very strong quarter for electronics. Notwithstanding the lower revenue and its net profit was up 8% due to favorable sales mix for our electronics sector. Land Systems revenue improved by 34% and its net profit dropped 3% year-on-year, mainly due to the absence of a 3.4 million favorable tax finalization adjustment. Marine's revenue was flat, but its net profit grew 38%, largely due to its improved U.S. shipbuilding performance. We had a good start to the year, and we also had a strong quarter for contract wins, which helped us to strengthen our order book to a high of $14.1 billion. During the quarter, we announced over $2.1 billion worth of new contracts, contributed largely by a 10-year contract extension by one of our aerospace customers and various smart city-related contracts at the electronics sector. Outside of this total, Marine also secured new contracts. For example, it was awarded the 3rd Barracks Barge, also known as APL class berthing barges by the U.S. Navy. So this is first of four options that was exercised, bringing the total firm order now to three. If you recall, we said we have firm order of two with option of four APL barges. So now we have a firm order of three. A highlight of the first quarter was our proposed acquisition of NewTek, a Satcom company based in Belgium, at €250 million euros for the electronic sector. I've shared during the analyst call back then, which many of you participated, that this acquisition is a meaningful development in our execution of the group's smart city growth. We are not a new participant in Satcom, as you all are familiar with, and in fact, we have been growing this business through our US-based iDirect and Singapore-based Satcom product and solution business team over the years. Satcom is a fast-growing industry. The search of low Earth orbit, or LEO, LEO constellations will increase bandwidth capacity and reduce operating costs, thereby creating new demand for Satcom solutions. New use cases, especially to support smart city applications such as IoT and connected cars, will drive demand for Satcom services. We see NewTek products, capabilities and market access as complementary and synergistic to our current Satcom business. And when acquired, will enable us to meet demand across the full spectrum of the Satcom market. Now, at this point, we are looking to complete the transaction sometime in the second half of this year. This acquisition is expected to be earning accretive from year two onwards, in other words, around second half of next year. We expect to incur transaction expenses of about 1% of purchase consideration, which is quite normal for transactions of this size. Most of the transaction expenses will be incurred in the second half of 2019, largely in the second half of the year. For our land system sector, one highlight is that we receive our first seaport autonomous material handling solutions contract, which is awarded by the Singapore Container Port Operator, PSA. 80 automated guided vehicles will be integrated into the operations of PSA's next generation port in Tuas, which is expected to commence in phases from 2021 onwards. So now moving to more recent developments. First, on our aerospace sector, we completed our acquisition of MRAS on the 18th of April. This addition has now boosted our aerospace network facilities in the US to support regional and global customers. Including Baltimore, where MRAS is based, the group now has major operations in 17 US cities, further strengthening the position of the US as our largest market outside Singapore. Now, we expect this acquisition to be accretive, earnings accretive. Now, immediate step for us is to ensure that the integration of MRAS into the aerospace sector is seamless with minimal disruption to our business. Now, to this end, a team has been formed, integration team has been formed, comprising staff from the Singapore office as well as members of the MRAS team to focus on the integration process. Over at Marine, you have learned the details of the Polar Security Cutter contract from Tsingshan. I will not go into details here again. On project management, VTHM has put together a team that has extensive experience in all elements to support the PSC program, from design to system integration to construction. This includes both in-house expertise as well as our supply chain partners. Tsingshan has said before that our U.S. yard now, Halton Marine, is a stronger yard than before due to the initiatives that we have put in place over the past couple of years to strengthen our business operations and to deepen its capabilities. We also would have noted that the yard's utilization has been very healthy with numerous wins, which we have announced in the last few months. We are now all geared to execute the projects on hand and for the Polar Security Cutter to be delivered on time and successfully. So on this note, I've completed my prepared remarks. I'll open the floor for questions. Yes, Rachel, please.
Hello. Good afternoon. This is Rachel from UBS. I have a question on your order book. So the announced orders seem to exceed your actual order book. If we add what you've announced for electronics, aerospace and marine and subtract the delivered orders in Q1, we should actually be seeing an order book closer to 15.5 billion instead of 14.1. So could you help us understand how you calculate your order book? Thank you.
The order book, what's in the order book is actually quite mathematical. It is how much we draw down plus new contracts that we win. So we arrive at $14.1 billion based on that mathematics. So there's nothing unusual in this quarter that warrant any discussion on our computation of order book. So.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hi, this is Ajit from UOB Kay Hian. Several questions from me. Firstly, Tsingshan, when theoretically, if the U.S. Navy exercises the options, when could they do so? So that's my first question. Second question to Sergey. On the AMM front, I noticed there's a decline in revenue in the current quarter. Is there any specific reason for it? Do you see any signs of slowdown? Is it because of slower PTF work? Are you being affected by the B-737 grounding? I mean, I spoke to several other companies. They said that they are being affected because there's a shortage of narrow-bodied fleet stock. Let's see, what else? In terms of the transaction cost for MRAS, would that be also approximately 1% or so, and would it be recognized in 2019? Then finally, on the IFRS 16, in terms of the depreciation of the capitalized operating leases, is it going to be again on a straight line basis over ballpark 30 years? Yeah, these are my questions.
So I'll let Sergey take on the first question. Tsingshan, and then Sergey, and then we follow that by Cedric. He will go in that order. Tsingshan.
The option have expiry dates. They are January 2023 and 2024, respectively. But obviously, we are hoping that, before the expiry date, well before the expiry dates, the U.S. Department of Navy would have exercised the options.
Yeah, You have more than one question for me. No, just one question. Okay. The first one regards to the AMM. You asked whether the drop is it due to a slowdown in the rising. The AMM drop is actually due to the sales mix. And it's not due to the core. Actually, the core airframe maintenance business remains robust, resilient. But we do see other part of the AMM, because AMM is a cluster, not just the aircraft maintenance and modification, but also includes other business portfolio like the pilot training. Okay. So there's a slight delay in the relocation of our pilot training facilities from Ballarat to Genicorp. So that sort of affect the AMM business segment. The 737 MAX grounding is a rather topical question. Currently, we do not support the 737 MAX MRO. But what is the impact? I would say it's possibly net positive for the aftermarket, but it's still too early to say. Obviously, it depends a lot on how long would be the 737 MAX be grounded. If it stretched beyond the third quarter of this year, okay, then I will see that the airline will start again investing in the older generation aircraft to backfill the capacity loss due to 737 MAX. And if that happens, then I'll say that the net positive will increase a little bit more positive. As far as the MRS, you asked whether the transaction cost will be, is it around the same ballpark, and whether yes, will we be taking up this year. It's in the same ballpark, but the cost has actually been taken up last year, the transaction cost. As what Cedric and Vincent have mentioned, the MRS will be accretive even after we factor in the interest expense as well as the integration cost.
Okay. On IFRS 16, fundamentally what happened is that IFRS 16 will not allow operating leases and will require companies worldwide to basically present value all the operating leases and treat it as an asset. So within the asset, there will be depreciation and interest payment. In terms of depreciation, because we have different kind of operating leases that have now been treated as assets, it is straight line, and it can range from 2 years to 30 odd years, depending on the type of asset. Yeah. PC versus a lease of a building. Yeah. So although depreciation is straight line, the interest expense associated with that piece of asset would be like a triangle, because outstanding principal in the early years would be higher, and as depreciation takes place, the outstanding value of the asset will be lower, and therefore the interest expense will correspondingly drop. Yeah. So in other words, we're taking the medicine up front with benefit in the future as compared to straight-line operating leases in the past.
Excluding the impact of this IFRS, would I be correct to assume that the earnings would have been a tad better?
Yes, you'll be better. Yeah.
Yes, Silky, please.
Hi, we'll go by division. For aerospace, component zero and EMS was also quite strong, even Q&Q and year-on-year. Anything special that you want to highlight? Because I remember you said that the outlook for components may be a bit challenging, but this quarter it posted quite strong increase, and for EMS as well.
The components business segments remain challenged, where the improvement in the several business is due to the engine. The reason is because we At a PBT level, the reason is because we managed to recover interest expense charges from a customer that had not been paying us promptly.
Right.
Yeah. It's, if I can recall, it's about 3 million.
EMS
essentially is against sales mix plus the PAT has improved is due to the accrual, the tax, prior year tax adjustment.
Okay. So on marine, can I just check if you're going to study the, you know, the design and engineering for the next 18 months, do we expect upfront costs to implicate your earnings or shipbuilding from 19 and 20 before your construction in 2021?
Okay, as far as recognition of revenue is concerned, there is no change. So the revenue recognition method will stay the same as in all other previous programs. One, two. And as far as cash flow is concerned, it's an agreement that we are allowed to build progressively.
So you start building even when you do the engineering and study?
That's correct.
Process. Okay. When you said design is proven, this is in-house design, or you are buying or work with external party? I just wanted to hear your point of view on how are you doing differently for this project versus the rest of the projects in US last time, which may have seen cost overrun, and also given that this is a new sort of technology and design for you, how are you doing differently?
So it's a very good question. In this particular case, i.e. Polar Security Cutter, the parent design, this is how we call it, is the Polar Stern 2. So the Polar Stern 2 design is at its very advanced, if not completed stage. That's one. Two, I earlier mentioned we got this 18 months of funded design studies. And in the 18 months, we went through several iterations, to be exact, six, and we went through model tests. We also interacted with the design company that owns this parent design. We have also hired in experts from several countries, Germany, Finland, Coast Guard, ex-staff, to help in the validation and the iteration of design before, as I said, we submitted the offer in October 2018. Now, going forward, another 18 months, there will be several stages. In our terms, we said PDR, CDR, and then IDR. So these are stages or reviews that we do together with the customers. Likewise, in Singapore, with our programs, with the Navy, for example, we do the same. Last but not least is that the customer will ensure that we are production ready before we're even allowed to cut steel. And you can, and there will be a lot of participation, active participation from the customer side. So we're provided, we have taken all this into consideration when we price our products, taking in consideration, for example, the number of engineering man hours that we need. So as I mentioned earlier, we have to increase the size of the engineering workforce, but in the unlikely event that we're not able to ramp up, we got alternative means, we got plan B to make sure that we can meet the requirements of the customers, which in this case, it will be the Navy as well as the Coast Guard. They have a joint program office.
Thanks. How many, what's the workforce in US now and how much do you intend to increase?
Okay, from now till the end of 2019, because we are in the design stage, so there is not a lot of requirement for the production workforce. So what's the current workforce in the U.S.? Around about 500. What is it that we need to ramp up? Will be largely in the engineering workforce, engineering design workforce.
Thanks. Sorry, I actually forgot to ask you a question, Ravinder. Large-scale project, is there anything special that you want to highlight in that? Because it's quite strong this quarter.
Yeah, so I think, overall 2 points. I think first point is that, as Vincent mentioned, last year this quarter was very strong, very unusual for us. Typically, our revenue per quarter should be at about 525. So it was a surge because of project completion as well as some projects that were completed using completion method. So as a result, the revenues that quarter were last year was very strong. This year's quarter for the electronic sector, I think numbers are actually quite good. First quarter is typically not our strongest quarter, but quite a good quarter. For LSG in particular, on the revenue side, actually, they had a number of projects that were completed on the train side. And as a result, there's some additional revenue we recognized. And then in terms of profitability, part of it is simply because of the sales mix, and part of it, some of the charging mechanism that we have, because LSG is part of the electronics corporate headquarters. So just some of the accounting process. But if you look at LSG as a whole, I think they've done very well this quarter, both on revenue point of view as well as profitability. But overall for the year, we'll probably maintain the momentum simply because of the nature of the electronics business, which is based on projects. And when you look at it from a full year point of view, the momentum will be maintained.
Okay, so for LSG, it could be up and down quarter to quarter, right?
Quarter to quarter, yeah.
Okay.
Depends on when the projects are completed.
Sure. And then should we be actually concerned about the CSG margin, or is again sales mix and all? Is there any allocation of
cost? Okay, so CSG, our satellite business is part of the CSG group, and I think in previous quarters have explained that they have a different cycle. Their cycle tend to be stronger because of the way the costs are loaded, tend to be stronger towards the end of the year. But generally, CSG as a group is a very strong in product business. I think they've got good orders this first quarter. So overall, we expect them to maintain the profitability and the revenues.
And also the transaction costs will be parked in CSG for
yes,
new tech.
Yes, transaction costs for new tech will be parked in CSG.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, thank you. This is Jason from DBS. So I think we asked this before in the earlier analyst presentations, but we're seeing again increasing tensions between the U.S. and China, and ST Engineering is still expanding its presence in the U.S. So could you help clarify the potential impact or opportunities, if any, from escalating tensions between the two countries? So that's the first question. And on the second question, could you share more on the joint venture with SP Group to build an alternative fiber network? I understand that they mentioned they are looking to invest hundreds of millions. So I'm just looking what's the split between ST Engineering and SP Group, and also what's the expected investment outlay. And finally, okay, actually that's it for now. Thank you.
Okay, so maybe I'll take on the first question. Obviously, for trade tensions, that affects the entire world. We are still watching how this plays out. At this time, the impact on our group, there is some impact, but I mentioned to you that it's not material. Because for long-term projects, there are always adjustment factors that we work with our customers, and for short lead time, items we could potentially pass it into the market. But we do have some negative impact, but it's not material for us to be concerned. We need to watch the space. One of the strengths that we have is that we have a diverse portfolio and we draw on each other's strengths to help us weather through difficult times. Now, at this point, we're certainly watching it carefully. This kind of trade tensions, we are not immune totally at all, and we just have to keep watching and make sure that we optimize our supply chain and then we strengthen our core capabilities and operations to be resilient as we can against the macroeconomic movements. Okay.
So I'll take the question on SPTEL. So I think you may have read the recent press announcements made by SPTEL. So SPTEL is a JV between ST Engineering and Singapore Power. And the JV builds on a business that actually SP have had for many years, which is a company that has fiber cables that are lit alongside the power grid. And it was used traditionally for managing the power network. And after some time, SPTEL started leasing the fiber to other operators. So when we went into the joint venture together with SingPower, we recognized that in Singapore, first of all, there is a growing demand for data and fiber connectivity simply because of Smart Nation drive as well as the major enterprises moving to cloud, and cloud being one of the biggest driver of future growth. We see many of the cloud companies coming to Singapore, setting up data centers, and both for Singapore as well as for the region and the world. So there is a huge demand for more bandwidth, especially at the fiber level. So SPTEL asset is separate from Netlink Trust because the cables are laid deeper, well protected, and together with the power cables that are laid for Singapore. So we decided to take advantage of the infrastructure they have, build the infrastructure, and be a provider of alternative fiber connectivity. Today in Singapore, as you may have read in the press release, there's actually only one major fiber network owned by OpenNet. And whenever there is a cut or a fire or a failure, typically it affects all the service providers because they're all running along the same pipes. So with SPTEL coming on board, we actually offer alternative fiber. So our business model is really not to compete, but rather to complement. Especially for the enterprise side. We have no intention to go to the consumer household connectivity. But on the enterprise side, whether it's critical infrastructure for government, major enterprises like banks and data centers, they have tremendous demand as well as they are looking for diversity. So we are going to invest and build and extend our reach to the major and critical infrastructure in Singapore to provide this service. And because we are building this network from scratch, in the sense that the fibers are there, but the systems to manage the connectivity has to be built up, we're able to build a fully digital, what we call self-service, one-touch, dynamic system that allows a lot of flexibility to the enterprise customer. So we are going to make investments in the order of a few hundred millions between us and SingPower over the next few years. But based on how we have studied the market and the opportunities, we're quite confident that this will be quite a viable business simply because the demand is there and we are providing a need that is critical, in particular, not just because of the physical diversity, but also because of cybersecurity threats. So it becomes more and more important for banks, security infrastructure, to have alternative fiber paths if you want to provide resilient and reliable fiber connectivity. So that's the approach we are taking.
And obviously, as Ravi mentioned, we are not burdened by legacy assets. So we are building it from scratch. We're going to use software solutions and not just the traditional hardware solutions to come up with state-of-the-art solution that is efficient and cost-effective for our end customers. We, of course, will be quite selective in where we do this last-mile connection to the enterprises, as Ravi said. Where it only make economic sense, we will build. Otherwise, we will not. So we'll be quite selective.
Okay, this is a question from Morningstar, Don Yu. The question is, one, could you please discuss whether you expect the higher OPEX in land system to continue? If so, for how long do you expect the elevated OPEX to continue for? Two, should we expect the higher OPEX in robotic and autonomous vehicle a reflection of a shift in products mix in the medium term? Currently, the investment are actually in several areas, three areas in particular. One is, you know that we are actually rolling out the new generation, next generation armor fighting vehicle, second half of this year. So in terms of the preparation, in terms of the investment, in terms of for the production line, is coming to completion. We have set up the Industry 4.0, digitization of the production line. We have phased in the advanced robotic welding and also some of automation, which position us well in terms of the productivity gain for the longer term. So that is one track. The other track is more in terms of the commercial. You know that we are doing various kind of buses, commercial buses for LTA. So that is also rolling out later part of this year and the beginning of next year. So we do not see that there will be a continual investment of OPEC in these two areas. In the robotic and autonomous bus, we are actually making good progress. As you can see that we have a credible capability now to win contract from PSA. And I think from NEA, you also, announcement, you also know that we have also won the R&D project for the road sweeper, the next generation road sweeper. So we will continue to invest in building up the capability both at the product level, at the system level, for robotic in the near term. But the idea, the business model is that whenever we have the credible capability, we will go and win contract, and that will help us to relieve the investment needed to build up the capability. So that is my explanation on this. Okay.
Hi, Ajit again. Could you elaborate on your, the nature of your JV with Workhorse, in their contract with to supply trucks. They're not contracting a bid for the trucks with U.S. Postal Service. Nature of your JV.
Well, I'll leave Xianglong to talk about it. It's not a JV. We are the prime contractor for the prototype contract, and Workhorse is our partner. We have completed the prototype phase. At this time, the RFP for the main production has not been issued, and we're not at liberty to discuss the project at this point. So that it's not a joint venture. It's not a joint venture.
Yeah, just add on. So the RFP is not out yet. It's scheduled for the 3Q, if not 4Q of this year. So the initial phase was that we partner, this our subsidiary Hackney partner with Workhorse, for the prototype development. And that has gone on well. We have delivered the vehicle and it had went through all the testing that's required and it was completed in March this year, just recently. And now we are waiting for the RFP and we will evaluate carefully whether should we go in to bid for it. But as in, actually we explained about several quarter ago, about last year, first Q or second Q, we elaborated that even if we win, it will not have a significant contribution to our bottom line.
Yeah. So if you recall, I mentioned that before. This is not expected to be a significant contributor to us, even if we win from a bottom line standpoint. But anyway, the RFP is not out, so we will not be able to discuss any further detail. If there are no further questions anymore online, I thank all of you for being here this morning. And you're welcome to join us for lunch. And for those of you who dial in by webcast, thank you very much for your participation. Thank you.